On this episode, we discuss Kidnap,
known in my house as Catch That Kid.
And welcome to the Flophouse. I'm Dan McCoy.
Hey there, Dan. I'm Stuart Wellington.
Hey, Dan. Hey, Stu. Nice to meet you for the first time ever. My name is Elliot Checks Card Kalen.
Well, welcome.
How are you?
Welcome to the Flophouse, Elliot.
Good to meet you. What line of work are you in?
I just ride these here rails, seeing what kind of adventures and shenanigans I can get into, maybe saving lives and maybe breaking hearts. Mm. I don't know. I guess you'd call me like kind of a traveling vagabond, you know, just a man
Woolbury?
Of rags and patches.
Yeah.
What?
A traveling Woolbury.
Yeah, you'd call me a traveling Woolbury. I'm an incredibly rich and famous rock star who's pretending to be like a hobo.
Okay.
Wait,
for fun.
Wait, Jeff Lynne is incredibly rich and famous?
They don't get richer or more famouser.
Well, those are the kind of great bits you can find on the Flophouse, which you're listening to right now. And if you want to support the Flophouse, boy, howdy, is this the time of year to do it? Because this is the Max Fun Drive. Actually, technically, the Max Fun Drive will start one day after this drops, but
okay.
This is our Max Fun Drive episode.
The cops don't have to drag you away.
Well, I don't know. I don't know whether people get the donor bonus content if they donate too early. I don't know what that.
Nor do they get the boner donus content.
I was going to say the same thing, Stu. you beat me. So, Dan, I want to remind people, later on we'll be talking more about the Max Fun Pledge Drive, which is when you, the listener, can help us, the podcasters, stay in business and keep our show going so you can keep listening to it and help out other Max Fun shows, but mostly us. But I want to remind everyone first, let's not Max Fun Pledge Drive angry.
Okay.
Somebody had to say it.
But yeah,
somebody had to say it, and I'm glad I was the one who did it.
This is the best time of year to sign on as a member, or if you're already a member, upgrade your membership. Think about that, maybe.
We'll talk about it more later. Now, if you're already like, I can't wait, just go to MaximumFun.org/donate. But otherwise, stay tuned, and we'll tell you more about what you can get as a donor. Otherwise, you'll just have to sit and listen to our usual garbage, which begins now.
Okay, well, this is a podcast where we watch a bad movie and we talk about it.
Uh-huh. But wait, Dan, we watch Kidnap starring Halle Berry.
Yeah. Well,
I don't want to get ahead of myself, but I don't know if this fits our podcast.
Yeah. It could be. Could be, guys. I don't know. I had a kind of a good time, but let's not
kind
spoil.
Of a good time raves Dan McCoy.
Now,
guys, do you think this movie should have actually just been called Baby Driver?
Well, no, the baby is not driving.
Yeah.
There's no baby. It's like a 9-year-old kid.
I mean, it's a person who drives a baby around.
That's true.
Okay, again, it's a grown child, like in the 7 to 9 range, 7 of 9, if you will. It's not a baby.
I mean, she describes her child as being 6 years old. And I think,
really?
Of six,
to be
right.
honest, I mean, I'm not a mother, guys. I know that comes as a shock.
Okay.
Not yet.
I'm not a mother.
Not yet, anyway.
You know, I think it would be hard for me to admit that my child isn't my baby anymore, you know?
Well, around the time that a creep in a jean jacket steals your kid away, that's when they're no longer your baby anymore. That's when they've grown up and it's time for them to leave the nest and go to a scary shack in a swamp somewhere.
Yeah.
Hey, guys.
A decoy jean jacket.
Now, should we talk about what happens in this movie?
I think that the listener almost expects it at this point.
Yeah, so the movie begins, guys, and I want to paint you a picture of the Wellington household.
Okay.
So I've started the movie, and then I say, Alexa, pause.
Okay.
I told you to start the movie Kidnap, not a demo reel of an animation studio's thing just running through different production company logos.
Yeah, Alexa goes, also notice.
Alexa goes, Stuart, but this is the movie Kidnap. And I go, no.
My first note on Kidnap in my notes is so many production logos.
I believe this movie sat on the shelf for a few years.
Like an elf.
Yeah, Halle Berry was one of the producers on this. I guess this was her like trying to move into the Liam Neeson Taken, you know, phase of her career. But it took a while for this to get distributed. And I wonder whether that has anything to do with the production company surplus.
Yeah, I'm guessing one ran out of money and then another one picked up the ball. And
yeah.
Like a relay race.
Yeah, a real relay race.
Yeah.
It was a real production bucket brigade.
Yep.
To put out the fire we had in our hearts for a movie like Kidnap.
Now, the movie opens up where? That's right.
So the first
New Orleans, Louisiana.
But the first thing we see is we see a lot of home movie footage of a baby growing up to be a boy, with voiceover of Halle Berry being like, "Oh, so oh, yeah, you can do it. Oh, okay, yeah, come over here. Oh, so sweet. This is some real boyhood shit right here." I was like, "Am I watching Boyhood? What's going on?" I thought I was watching Kidnap.
To be a fly on the wall in those ADR sessions.
Now, I will say there was this is when the movie started tugging my heartstrings, purely because I also have experienced watching a boy growing up and getting older, starting
what,
as a
like
baby.
In a movie?
The hell you say?
Yes. Like in a movie, so like watching DJ Tanner grow up. Wait, that's a girl. DJ Roseanne's kid grow up.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Dan Jr. Yeah,
that's what DJ. Fuck.
That's what DJ stands
it's
for.
And like the weird the is, end of the usual suspects the, over here.
The weird thing is that's what DJ Tanner's name stood for too. Dan Jr. There's not even a Dan in that family.
Danny Tanner.
Oh, but wait, but then why would he name it? Wait, hold on a second.
Yeah,
I guess Danny Tanner is the Dan of that is the dad, right?
Yeah.
Well, Dan, here's a question
our
I have.
House talk, I guess.
Dan and Roseanne. Dan, did you name yourself Dan after all the sitcom dads you have seen, like Dan Connor and Danny Tanner?
Well, yes. Like most people, I named myself Elliot. That was
like Prince and David Bowie. Were they born with those names? No.
Yeah. So
Elton John, Michael Caine.
When Dan was a small child, his father set out a ball, a sword, and the name Dan, and was like, "You have to make a choice."
Yeah, I've been regretting that choice for my whole life.
Yeah, if you choose the sword, it means you will try to overthrow me, and then I will have you executed. If you choose the ball, you'll be the sports loving son I've always wanted. And if you choose Dan, it tells us nothing.
Yeah, it just comes along with a lot of sighing.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to not make a choice, you stuck your hand in the hot coals and immediately put it in your mouth and burned your tongue, and that's why you can't talk good now.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for my origin story.
Yeah, a lot of. A lot of mythology today, guys. What's going on? So, is it all home movies? What the fuck is this movie about?
No, we established that Halle Berry is a mother, and she has a son named Frankie. Uh-huh. He's about six, and she's a waitress. She's a real sassy waitress, always being very sassy, especially to the very bitchy, skinny white girl who is trying to challenge her, I guess, on what's available on the menu because
I mean,
they don't
know
the kind of milk that she likes.
She's a terrible customer.
She's a bad customer. They say the customer's always right. In this case, they're wrong.
Yeah, I mean, this isn't retail. I feel like in a food and beverage situation, you're dealing with the customer only sometimes being right.
Yeah.
Why is that different? You would think in retail, the customer would be right less often because they're buying prepackaged items that nothing could be changed about it. Whereas in food service, you can change, you know, what you're making because it's all on the fly, rendered in 3D in the moment.
Well, I guess maybe it's because most of the time when I'm dealing with customers, they're usually drinking. And I mean, at that point, their judgment is suspect.
Yeah,
that's true. Drinking does lower the level of rightness you
but
can expect.
The weird thing is I'm also usually drinking. So eye of the beholder,
thrill,
you know?
Yeah, Mobius strip.
But you're just doing that to level the playing field, right?
Yeah, exactly. See, if I weren't drunk, I would just be operating at such a high level of intellectual stuff.
Intellectual stuff.
You're like, the customer comes up to you and is like, "Let me tell you something." And you go, "Hold on. Before I best you handily in mental combat, allow me to handicap myself to make this a fair fight." Mm-hmm. And then you just chug, what, like a whole bottle of vodka?
Mm-hmm. Harrison Bergeron brand vodka.
Yeah. Okay, so Halle Berry is a waitress. The person who's supposed to relieve her for her shift didn't show up. Uh-oh. So her son's with her. But then they do show up, so she leaves.
Yeah, crisis averted.
And so here's the thing I'm going to tell you about this movie. The first 15 minutes, I was like, this is going to be a pretty bad movie. And then after, I feel like that 15 minutes was not representative of the whole thing. Because we find out that Halle Berry's divorced. Her ex-husband's new girlfriend is a med student. Mm-hmm. Clearly, he's moved up in the world because she's just a waitress. Halle Berry takes her son to one of those amusement parks that are in the movies where everything's kind of sinister. And yeah. You know that something bad's going
to
happen.
You know the Punisher's family's about to get shot to pieces.
There's one dude that asks her about her kid who is so stilted and creepy. Like when they're sitting on a bench together, that I'm like, this can't be the bad guy in the movie because it's too obvious.
Like, this guy's either the bad guy or he's the bass player in a Styx cover band that's about to go on.
Maybe he's the bad. He could be the bad guy from another movie who just happened to wander into this movie briefly and then left.
I think if we see a Neil Breen movie, yeah, and there's a scene that inexplicably has Halle Berry in it because he was shooting a movie at that moment too.
Yeah.
And that guy was a character in his movie who was sitting on that bench. Then I'll be like, oh, I get it. Okay, these movies got tangled up.
If that guy was wearing a suit, he would be managing a pro wrestler.
But it was, you expected any minute this guy, you're like, oh, this guy has creep written all over him. He's so weird and off and doesn't seem like he's asking her about her son. And then he just kind of leaves. And you're like, okay, that was, in a weird way, it's the most off-putting scene in the movie because you're expecting something and it never happens.
Yeah, that's the thing you think about at like hours after the movie when you're lying in bed and you're like mentally cataloging your day.
Yeah, and then you turn next to you, and that guy is in bed next to you, and you go, ah, and you wake up and go, oh, it's just a dream. And then you turn over, and he's still in bed with you, and you go, ah.
He gets
and maybe you wake up that time, too. You wake up that time, and you're on the set of the Bob Newhart show, and Suzanne Plachet is like, what's wrong, Bob?
And you're like, I traveled back in time, and I'm Bob Newhart now.
This is going to be great.
Yeah. I got a bunch of good years.
Honestly,
till I had
who
to
would not want to be?
Yeah,
who would not want to be Bob Newhart at the height of his success? Come on.
Well, you say you go back in time, but I think actually when you incept somebody that deeply, when you keep going deeper and deeper, time just goes super duper slow.
Now,
That's true. According to an academic text I once watched.
Yeah. Now the listener might think that we're wasting a lot of time this time around, but there's not like the plot I would call in this movie is breezy and thin.
Yes, like, this is a movie that is almost entirely car chase.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Which is not in a bad way.
I was confused because the movie was trying to make me believe that Halle Berry's son is named Marco.
Okay.
But it is not. They were just playing the game Marco Polo, which is something that you normally do with a kid in an amusement park. And then he gets
snatched.
Something
you normally do in water, but she does it on land. And so that's how you know she's like a quirky mom.
Yeah. And the kid talks into a weird robot, and that's great because that weird robot later records his kidnapper.
Now this is a toy. This is like a toy phone in the shape of a robot. It's not like R2-D2 is not wandering around the amusement park. We're not in the future. It's not the robot never says to Halle Berry, like, follow me if you want to live. None
that
of
robot
that stuff.
Never accidentally gets on a burger grill and gets cheese put on it like it's a hamburger. Because there was an opportunity. Maybe, the movie began in a diner.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's true. That's one of my top four robot movie moments, I think, is when the battery's not included robot gets cheese put on him.
Now that's what I call an impossible burger. Hey, guys, have you ever had one of those?
okay. I haven't, but now that I live in L.A., everyone asks me about having one all the time.
Well, you should just direct their attention to that scene. You should just send them a GIF of that moment and batteries not included.
Say, now this is what Stewart calls an impossible burger. So I'm not going to steal the joke from you.
Yeah, thanks
give you
for giving credit.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not some Twitter aggregator. I want to give credit where credit's due. Anyway, let me tell you this joke I came up with. It's about this baseball team, and the baseball players have some pretty crazy names. I invented it.
Yeah.
Anyway, So she gets a call from her lawyer and says to her son, hold on, I'll be right back. Her ex-husband wants primary custody, and Halle walks away from her son to take the call. Now, she should just save that call for later. It's a call from her lawyer is only going to upset her. This is supposed to be her time with her son. So, like, I know in this connected world it's hard to let go.
And this is right after her son's like, "Mom, can I go get my face painted?" And she's like, "No, after this song." Like, it feels like one of those, like, jazz songs that's just never going to end.
Well, that's what she knows. She doesn't want to go get his face painted because it costs like $10. Yeah. So she's like, "Oh, after this song." And she knows this is a jam band that's just going to keep going until they fall asleep.
Yeah, by the time the song's done, he's going to have a full beard and doesn't want to get face paint on it.
The performers they're listening to, it reminded me of, there's a type of like amusement park or carnival performer where it's like you want to take them aside as a parent and be like, "You realize that what you're doing could be like 10 times less creepy and scary, right? Like if you didn't wear that makeup or dress up in those costumes, I know you're trying to have fun and I appreciate that. But like this could be just like a fun circus musical number if you weren't like a weirdo clown monster." I guess maybe I'm projecting too much about a small circus that I saw in Northern California.
Yeah.
That had some amazing acts, but between every act was interspersed a video where this weird gravelly voiced French clown talked about like the spirit of life and love and destiny and
awesome.
how we kill those things in our soul when we don't feel joy. And it felt like between every, there was like a juggler. Oh, that was great. Okay, now here's a video from someone who kidnapped somebody I loved and is like putting me on a weird poetic game of cat and mouse. Okay, now a tightrope walker. That was fun. Oh, now it's video from the kidnapper again. Again, what are his ransom demands? Oh, that I feel joy in my heart? Okay, that's difficult when there's like a zombie clown monster threatening me through videotape. It was, let me just say this. Circuses, you don't have to be poetic. It's okay. This isn't Europe. End of PSA. That was my public service announcement.
Oh, cool. Yeah. So the kid gets kidnapped, right? Do we talk about that?
Yes. she comes back and Frankie is gone, and she catches just a glimpse of Frankie being dragged into a car.
This is after an older woman gives voice to my question. Is his name Frankie or Marco?
Because she's going, "Frankie, Marco, Frankie." And mm-hmm. A woman does say, "Is his name Frankie or Marco?" And she's just like, "Whatever," and runs away.
I mean, it is confusing. If now, you're trying to find a kid that's been kidnapped, like you do want to be absolutely clear about the parameters of what's going on.
Yeah, and also, it's kind of a Life is Beautiful type thing. She doesn't want Frankie to get too upset, so she continues the Marco game.
Oh, okay.
And I imagine in Life is Beautiful, some of the other concentration camp inmates were seeing Roberto Benigni joking around, and we're like, "Wait a second, is this a game? Or are we actually is this a genocide?" Because I'm being confused right now. Like, Roberto, you're really messing with my head right now, because it's not a fun game. I don't like it.
Yeah. It's not a game I signed up for, as I do with most games.
Mm-hmm.
Is this like the game with Michael Douglas?
Yeah.
I think they're probably just assuming it's that sharp cutting level of dark satire that's common in Europe, but not so much in America.
Exactly. Don't want it. No. Americans like things straightforward. Make my circus happy. Make my cutting satire not exist. Don't even do it. Okay, so Halle Berry is like, she catches a glimpse of the car, which is kind of like an aging, rundown, sports car or something
like
that?
Yeah, it's a hatchback.
Mm-hmm. And
without a license plate.
Without a license plate. And she gets into her minivan.
Wait, you got to give – this is the most – I mean, this is second billing character here. This is her 2011 Chrysler Town & Country minivan.
And if there's a better if there's a better ad for this Town and Country minivan, I can't think of it, because this thing has super pickup.
It handles like a dream.
Yeah,
it accelerates amazingly. The one thing about this thing that it's like, well, the funny thing about this movie is that whenever she accelerates, we see her speedometer go up to like 40. It always is. It's always centered around the 40 miles, and I'm like, that's not that fast. Like this.
It always starts.
You're not
at like
impressing
20.
Me by showing me that she's going 40 miles an hour.
Yeah, it always starts at like 20, and you're like, you're on the highway. You're going only 20 miles an hour.
Like, this would impress me maybe if you were driving in a school zone when children were present, but like not.
But that's
not
the problem, Elliot. The child is not present.
Yeah,
just like, that's true.
Just like the bumper sticker reads almost mockingly on the back of her minivan, Chrysler Town and Country minivan. That it reads baby on board when we all know the baby is not on board.
No, the baby is on board another car.
Yeah.
So she goes on a car chase, and now this car chase this is the heart of the movie. And by the heart, I mean the body of the movie. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because most of this – and I have to admit, guys, let me just pull back the curtain early. By the moment she got in her car and was driving after this car, this movie had me. And I was feeling genuinely tense and worried. Like, they do such a good job, especially with the early part of this car chase, of her keeping up with this car but keep constantly almost losing it. Yeah. But I was literally – and this is – I'm watching this while I'm doing the dishes on an iPad. And my response to it was literally like, hurry up. You're going to lose your kid. Get that car. Like, come on. What are you doing?
Yeah.
Like, it's so – I was so tapped into this primal, like, need to catch up, you know?
Yeah, I was, like, arguing with her on, like, while she was driving. Like, no, just ram it. Like, I was, like, trying to give advice.
I was watching this with Charlene last night, and she had been, like, falling asleep to the episode of Jessica Jones we were watching. And I'm like, hey, you want to watch a movie at 11 o'clock at night? And she's like, oh, okay, make me some coffee. And by the time we started, she was like bolt upright the whole time.
This is like, I don't remember the name of the director or the editor or anything, but like this is this is at times I almost feel like it's like Ronin level car chase stuff.
Whoa,
where
wow.
Where they're like, they're really like, it felt very, there was a real sense of like place and reality. And even just, there's a part where the car in front of her, the kidnappers, they just start throwing stuff out the back window of their hatchback to get in her way. And I was like, no, don't do that. It was, there's a part where – and Halle Berry is so intense. There's a scene where she's like praying to God during the – my note is she prays to God during the chase, but it only helps a little.
Well, she asks for like one thing. She asks for like her not to lose the car. She doesn't ask for her child back, which is like, I feel like that's the larger issue, that maybe she should have just gone for that.
She should have shot the moon.
I think she was.
Yeah.
I think she was worried that she would say to God, this is my scenario that I'm worried. I think she was worried about, God, please, I want my baby back. And then all God's going to think is, I want my baby back, baby back, baby back.
Yeah,
I want my baby back, baby back. Chili's, baby. And then God, for millennia, is going to have that song stuck in his head, and he's going to be like, damn you, humanity. And he'll just he'll somehow arrange it that the worst possible person is elected president of the United States, which, as we know, could never happen. But he'll arrange it that, like, the 10 unlikely things that could never happen altogether all happen together in 1 year, and just, like, the worst person becomes president and launches a nuclear war. That's the kind of thing that would happen if Halle Berry had said, I want my baby back.
Yeah. I think, Elliot, I think that, I mean, that's pretty tight. That makes a lot of sense.
Airtight.
Yeah, airtight.
Now, it sounds like at certain times, like, they're trying to plant the idea that Halle Berry is not actually sure this is happening. Like, maybe she's crazy. But then they abandon any hint of that pretty quickly, which I was glad about.
And for those of you guys listening at home that haven't watched Kidnap, what are you doing? Go watch Kidnap. But she very early, you're probably asking, why doesn't she just use her cell phone? Well, her cell phone died because she didn't charge it. So, guys, make sure you carry an extra battery pack. And also, then she dropped it in the street.
Yeah, I love how they double up on it. They're like, it's not enough that the battery's dead. She has to drop it, too.
Well, and also, and when she drops it, the movie is like, boom. And, like, the movie is saying, like, hey, ahead of time, viewer, I know what you're going to say should be the solution to this. Well, guess what? She can't do it. Bum, bum, bum.
I mean, have you dropped your phone on concrete? I feel like that sound always goes in my head when I do that.
You're just like, no. You have to – this – actually, the funny – this is – if this movie had gotten famous, here's the sketch I would have pitched at SNL, is that she's chasing after her son and her phone – drops and smashes, and she goes, no. And then she drives to the Apple store and is like, okay, do I really need like the X? It seems so expensive. And like, she's just so much more concerned with getting a new phone than with getting her son back.
No, for some reason, I thought your sketch idea would be like, then she pulls out a second phone that she had on her, and then she drops that one. And then she pulls out like an old rotary phone and drops that on the ground. And she's like, no, that'd be pretty good.
That's a pretty good silly stuff. Mine had more of a comment about consumerism, but yours is good too.
Yeah. I love later on when she gets picked up by like a weird old guy, and she's like, hey, I need to use your phone. And he's like, I don't have a phone. I got a radio though, but you only get reception over there.
That was – so anyway, she's chasing after them. They threaten her son until she – lets them drive away, but she catches up with them again. She hears on the radio that police are looking for her car. Like, she's trying to cause mayhem at a certain point so that the police will be looking for her so she can tell them her son is kidnapped. She finds the recorder that little robot toy Frankie was playing with, and she hears the recording of this woman convincing Frankie to come along with her because her mom's looking for her, for him.
Which doesn't actually add like any new information to the situation. Like, she's like, it's not like she's like, oh my God, he got kidnapped.
Well, it tells you, that there's a woman involved, because it turns out the kidnappers are a man and a woman, and they are like such, this is like, even this takes place in New Orleans, but the man is basically Florida man. and the woman is Florida woman, I guess. Like, they're like this exactly the like scraggly denim jacket wearing people you expect to be kidnapping children in the bayou.
Well, there's a certain, I feel like there's a fair amount of menace, at least in the woman. Like, there's something like
so
dead-eyed about this actress that she's great. And it, when she later on, when she walks up to the car and she's like, oh, it's pretty scary.
That was the first time we meet her. Yeah, so before that happens, Halle Berry tries to flag down a motorcycle cop, and the motorcycle cop's like, you're speeding, slow down, and she's shouting out the window, my son was kidnapped, and he's like, what? Because nobody can ever hear her.
Yeah.
And then, so he's like, pull over, and she's like, my son was kidnapped, what? Pull over. And then the bad guys slam the motorcycle cop up against Halle Berry's van with their car and crush him to death, essentially, and like, it's like, whoa, I didn't expect that to happen. That was crazy.
Yeah, I mean, it's between a speeding car and the most durable vehicle in the world, a 2011 Chrysler Town & Country.
I mean, that's when the safety standards that you buy that car for really become a problem.
Yeah,
because it's
that's
too
fair.
Safe.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, Halle Berry walks away without a scratch.
I do expect at the end of the movie when everything is resolved, like, I want to see the epilogue to the movie where they're, like, arresting Halle Berry and, like, you were really brave, but you caused a lot of mayhem along the way. Like,
and killed multiple people.
Yes.
But so there's a face-off with the kidnappers. The bad guy has a knife or something. She throws her purse, her pocketbook, I would call it, mm-hmm. at him, or her wallet, but he doesn't want it. And then she gets back in her car, and that's when the wife of the kid, of the man kidnapper, comes up. And like Stuart said, like,
I don't
just
know, is there a relationship super well defined? I mean, they could
it's
just,
definitely
could be
a romantic relationship.
Okay, that's fair.
I know, you know what? Maybe they are brother and sister. You're right. I was being very heteronormative. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's not the case.
Maybe they're
actually not in a romantic relationship.
Maybe they're brother and sister who are in a romantic relationship together.
It's the bayou. Who knows?
You know,
they could be doing whatever.
Folk.
I mean, that's a little classist, Dan.
No, but they're painted as, I mean, the movie is classist.
Look, they're swamp
painted
people.
As, like, swamp trash. Like, that. Like, they might as well have, like, a shirt that says that.
Stuart, there's no, she might as well have a shirt with an arrow that says, like, I'm with Stupid because he's my brother and my lover. But here, Stuart, these are people who have never done something you and I have done many times, which is pour a 2-liter bottle of soda into a cup to then transfer that soda to our mouths. These people have only ever taken the soda directly from the bottle into the mouth without a cup as a middleman in between. That's the people we're dealing with here.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, all their cups are probably sitting in an unattached dryer unit that's just sitting in the hallway of their Texas Chainsaw Massacre home.
Yeah. So this woman shows up, and like Stuart says, there's just something so – like, she is – the actress playing this character, she's playing, like, this pulpy, like, backwoods villain character, and she's so good because she's so – she seems so dead to the world. Like, she has no – whatever vulnerable part of her – died a long time ago and was replaced by just, like, you know, whatever it takes to survive in the swamp. You know, mm-hmm. like, she saw her daddy get eaten by a gator when she was 2.
Yeah.
And since then, she's been in trouble. You know,
her soul's filled with, like, crawdad parts. and child
tears.
And
it's just gumbo and remoulade. That's all that's in there. But when she first shows up, that and she, like, leans into the window of Halle Berry's car, that was the, like, or no, she knocks on the window, I guess.
Yeah.
Like, that was the scariest moment of the whole movie for me. But anyway, she says, look, do you have $10,000? Because we'll give this kid back to you for $10,000. My boyfriend / husband / brother Jimbo up there is going to drive your son. I'm going to get in your car. We're going to drive to a bank. We're going to get out $10,000, and then you can have your son back. And Halle Berry's like, oh, okay. And Halle Berry lets her into her car, and she almost immediately tries to beat Halle Berry up.
Yeah.
Tries to strangle her in the car.
Which is a mistake, because Halle Berry's in her home fucking turf, dude. When you're
Town & Country.
When you're an owner of a 2011 Chrysler Town and Country. Well, when somebody, like, welcome to my web, said the spider to the country person.
Yeah, because, well, she's saved by the she's saved by the great reclining seats that that car has. Because she's trying to be strangled by the seatbelt, and Halle Berry reclines, and that lets her neck out of the noose, basically.
Mm-hmm. And let me just say one thing about left and right side sliding back
sliding doors.
Yeah.
Let me just say one thing about Halle Berry in this situation. Halle Berry has done something we should all do when we get a car, which is read the manual. Because she knows every feature of this car. She knows exactly what to do. And also, she probably knows Krav Maga. I'm just going to put that out there, too. But it's town and country specific Krav Maga, where they're like, okay, I'm going to show you how to use every part of your town and country to defeat an assailant. You're going to do it like this. Let's say you're in the driver's seat. Of course you are. It's your car. Don't ever let anybody else drive your car. It's your car. It's like a samurai's sword. It's his soul in a sheath. Mm-hmm. This is your soul in a minivan. So don't let anyone else drive it. You wouldn't let them drive your soul, would you? I wouldn't let anyone drive my soul. And she's like, can we speed it up? I have to pick up my kid. I don't have a lot of time for this session. But anyway, we always read the manual. I guess that whether it's a video game, a car, or surgical equipment, always read the manual.
Absolutely.
That's what I would say. And even if it's brought to you by a guy named Manuel, like, read his situation. Say, like, hey, what's going on with you, Manuel? Like, let me, like, emotionally, physically, financially, I want to help you out. This is what's best. Just read all the manuals and Manuels. Mm-hmm. If you're watching Fawlty Towers, pay a close attention to Manuel, the character, because he's the funniest one in the whole show. Anyway.
A bit of an ethnic character.
very much so. Yeah. It's the famous caricature of the bumbling Spaniard that we're all so familiar with.
I like how Dan couched his critique there in case there are some big Fawlty Towers defenders.
I mean, well, you know, it's a great show. It certain parts of it haven't aged particularly well.
Sure. I mean, that scene where he's rude to the Germans who lived through World War II, that would never play now because those people would be elderly at this point. Mm-hmm. That scene has really aged. Yeah. Anyway, so moving on. Halle Berry eventually, she hurls the woman out of her car, again, taking advantage of those sliding rear doors, and tries to trick the male kidnapper into thinking that the female kidnapper has the car now by putting on the woman's jean jacket and just kind of like waving her hand around through the windshield. Uh-huh. And it is, I at this point, I really give the movie credit for being colorblind in its casting and in the characters, because the male kidnapper never seems to be like, well, that seems to be a black arm wearing my girlfriend's sister's jacket. Yeah. Maybe she, I don't know.
I mean,
know.
He's
Maybe
looking through
me.
A rearview mirror, dude.
I guess that's true. It's difficult. Very shadowy. She's following the bad guy, but she's running low on gas. Chase time again. Again, super tense chase. And I don't want to, like, I feel like we have to keep mentioning that, like, 75% of this movie is just car chase.
Yeah.
Like, it's just her in her car chasing after this guy. She finds the bad car abandoned. It was in an accident. The bad guy took Frankie off on foot. Uh-huh. She goes into the sheriff's office to repeat it. Oh, sorry, to repeat it, to report it. And the sheriff is like, well, I'm the only one here. I'll send some cars out. They should be out in like 15 minutes. Just wait here and we'll get it set up. And Halle Berry sees this wall of posters of kids who have been missing for years. And she's like, these are the ones who waited. I can't wait. And she goes on the hunt again.
Yeah.
And she's just driving around town, sees the kidnapper's jacket in a trash can, looks up, another car starts pulling away. She follows that car. Yeah, Dan?
This is the biggest contrivance in the movie, that she just could just drive around after losing the guy and be like, oh, here he is again.
Like, yeah, like that car is driving suspiciously. Oh, wait. That's correct. That is the kidnapper.
Yeah.
And that it is so dead in the middle of the day that the one car on the road in this town is the kidnapper's car.
So the kidnapper knows she's onto him, and he runs over a lady in the street.
Yeah. Well, this is after she smashes into his car a couple times.
Yeah. And so he runs over a woman in the street, and Halle Berry avoids the person on the street and then slams on the brakes so that the person who's already been run over doesn't get hit by another car. Her Chrysler Town and Country gets T-boned and does not move an inch.
Oh, no. So stable. So and the airbag, instant opening. Like, it's, you can't say enough about this car.
She at this point, she's been in like four car accidents.
Yeah. And the handling, she swerves right around that person in the street. She doesn't offer any help. Mm-hmm. Not at all.
I mean, she just gave that person their life back, Elliot.
Yeah.
But true. But the message that you send to the world by buying a Chrysler Town & Country minivan is, I'm taking care of myself. You take care of you.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
I'm in like every a man's battle tank. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I can withstand anything. What are you doing to help you out? Because when the bomb falls and I'm protected because I'm in my Chrysler Town & Country, mm-hmm. I don't have room for you. I got to watch my own family. So see ya. Except she doesn't say see ya. She stops and gets T-boned, like you're saying, by that other car.
Mm-hmm. And then she's back on the hunt, like immediately.
And then she goes back at it, but she slams into the bad guy's car, but she runs out of gas. No, why does she not have a solar powered car? Why don't all of us have solar powered cars? What happened, Dan? Why don't we have solar powered cars?
I assume it's some sort of vast conspiracy on the part of the car companies and the oil companies.
That's part of it. Also, it's a battery issue.
Oh, okay.
So she leaves her gasless Chrysler Town & Country sitting in the road. She flags down another vehicle. This is that aforementioned older fellow without a cell phone, but he does have a radio. They talk mm-hmm. about it for a little while, and then all of a sudden the kidnapper is back, and he's on the attack.
And we've learned that the kidnapper went down a dead end, mm-hmm. so he has to come back that way anyway. So he smashes into their car. Halle Berry blacks out, wakes up to find that the van driver is dead, mm-hmm. and the male kidnapper just, is getting out of his car.
Just another name to be added to the cenotaph of this movie.
Is he the first? He's the first death of the movie, right?
I'm sure that motorcycle cop probably died.
You're right. The motorcycle cop, if not dead, he's living a life worse than death, since everything below his shoulders has been crushed.
Yes.
Yeah. And... at the point that the kidnappers, after killing a police officer, were like, okay, if you give us $10,000, we'll give you your kid back. Like, that's crazy. Like, yeah. They're way too far gone at that point. $10,000? What?
They just need enough to get them down to Mexico.
Sure.
And then, I guess, get in trouble there.
Mm-hmm.
She wakes up, the man kidnapper. Let's just call him Scraggly Joe. Mm-hmm. He's like, because he looks, or you know what? He looks kind of like Spike, Snoopy's brother who lives in the desert.
Sure.
You know, with the long, scraggly mustache.
Yes, sure. Definitely.
The what?
The non-beagle version of Spike.
No, yeah, you're right. Yeah. Dan's right. We wouldn't want the listeners to think that he's some kind of dog man.
He's no Dex dog detective. Let's just make that
clear. No, he's a human man. He just has that kind of air of like droopiness about him. And comes at her with a shotgun, mm-hmm. and she's not in her town and country anymore. So she's in trouble. Although she then goes back into her town and country, right?
Yeah, of course. She leads him back into her safe space. And yeah. then she uses like, the town and country's parking brake to drag that man through the woods, totally killing him.
Yeah.
And finally, the town and country smashes into a tree and is no more.
Yeah.
Or is it?
She traps him in the door and drags him through. And it's like she says a thank you, not to God, but to Chrysler mm-hmm. for giving her. It's like you have to imagine there was at some point when He-Man's steed Battle Cat died in battle. And He-Man probably laid Battle Cat, a.k.a. Cringer, to rest. And you know what probably happened is Cringer didn't turn into Battle Cat in time. And there was a battle and He-Man was in danger and Cringer – finding the Battle Cat inside of him that was always there, mm-hmm. he leaped into the fray and saved He-Man. So it turned out Cringer was the real hero. And when He-Man was I guess, giving him a Viking funeral and lighting him on fire, on the pyre, he shed a tear and he said, Cringer, you were the real Battle Cat.
Yeah.
So it was you all along.
So I guess write up that fanfic and post it to the internet.
And then Teela says, you should have told him that when he was alive, damn it.
Wow.
And then then she storms off to become evil Teela.
And He-Man looks over to Orko, and Orko's like, I don't know, man. I don't even know if I have a face.
I got my own problem.
What am I? I got my own issues here.
So, yeah, she off the body of the dead kidnapper, she finds out the address of where her son most likely is being kept. And then she uses the still working, what is that, GPS unit in the Chrysler Town & Country?
It's like the navigation screen. Yeah.
So even in death, the Chrysler Town & Country provides one last bit of help.
Truly the hero of the film.
She lays her hand on the hood of this damaged steed and then heads off to find her son.
Says, says silently, "I will avenge you."
Mm-hmm.
It's, and goes off.
I mean, she also never takes has the a shotgun. Passing of a hero been so beautiful. It's, you know, I mean, I saw some notes, some like references to the death of Boromir in this moment.
No. Yeah.
Maybe deep down, the Chrysler Town and Country was chasing after the kid for its own ends. Maybe it wanted to catch the kid.
Yeah.
Who knows? Who knows?
Yeah. There was a real, anyway, there's, it was a truly heroic death worthy of this heroic character.
Yeah.
And we should all take a moment to remember it, but not too much of a moment, because night falls while she's walking to this house. She enters the house, and the lady kidnapper is in there answering a phone call. Turns out they kidnap kids and sell them for money, and the lady is like, "I want $100,000 now. You better pay up, blah, blah, blah." Halle Berry calls 911 after seeing the lady kidnapper leave and go into like a creepy old barn, and she grabs a knife. The shotgun she took with her, I guess she couldn't find the bullets, so she doesn't. She couldn't find the shells where they were stored.
It's a primitive weapon used only by bayou folk.
Yeah, I guess it's not as elegant as
a butcher knife.
Yeah, it had that probably a fingerprint lock, so she couldn't shoot it anyway.
Yeah,
it's coded to bayou DNA, but like RoboCop's gun. She calls 911. They say the police are coming. We have your location. And then she hears someone pick up the phone and start dialing, and she hangs up. The kidnapping woman walks back in, finds the shotgun, sees the phone is off the hook, gets in her pickup truck, drives away. I guess, I assume, to go see, hey, where's my boyfriend, brother?
Mm-hmm.
Halle Berry sees that the woman just brought back from the barn a half-empty pizza box and some juice boxes.
Wait a minute.
This woman's ashamed of her childish eating habits, or perhaps... I wonder, you know what it is probably? Like I was saying, they don't have cups. They're not used to drinking out of cups. So she's looking for some kind of drink that you can just drink it out of the thing you buy it in. Mm-hmm. And that's juice boxes.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like that's the closest moment you're going to get to like a hunter kneeling down to like feel the warmth of like the shit of an animal. Like that's the natural food. That's the natural prey of a kid.
Yeah. There's a juice box carcass here. Still warm. They've been through this area. She goes to the barn and calls for Frankie, who's in like a locked loft area.
Mm-hmm.
And there's two other kids there. And she takes a jagged shovel and she's going to break a hole. I thought she was going to break a hole in the ceiling, but she's just going to knock a big pipe out of the way to make the hole bigger for them to go through. But then the kidnapper comes back. Oh, no. She knocks out that pipe. The kidnapper is loading the gun. Halle Berry says, "Other girls, I'll be back. Frankie, you come down. We got to get out of here." And she runs with Frankie. The kidnapper sicks a mean dog on them. Mm-hmm. No. Yep. Terrible.
They run down to a pier or a dock or whatever. And they send out a dummy boat to trick the kidnapper when they're actually hiding under like their Rambo.
Yeah, they're hiding under the dock in the water like Rambo. The kidnapper shoots her gun into the boat, but the dog smells them under the dock. And the kidnapper's like, "Huh?" And she's about to shoot under there when, just like in Rambo, Halle Berry jumps up from under the dock and pulls the kidnapper down. And the gun goes off and shoots the dog. That's how good Halle Berry is at this point amazing. As a Town and Country commando.
Well, the thing is, she has played so many games of Marco Polo.
Oh.
Of course she's going to murder this lady in a game of Marco Polo, right?
Oh, yeah, you're right. I didn't even see that brilliant piece of seeding and paying off. It's like, now it. She goes, "It appears the Polo has become the Marco." Or she's like,
That was in the first draft of the screenplay. And they're like, "Can we take this line out?"
Halle Berry was like, "I can't figure out a way to deliver that line realistically, and I'm already in like 3 feet, 4 feet of water, so can we not do that?"
Yeah.
Okay, you're the producer. You could have just asked me to take the line out. Do you think that it's that she was like, in order to defeat a bayou swamp person, I must become a bayou swamp person?
Yeah.
And that's when she like gets – that's when she decides she's going to hide in the water under the dock. She and the kidnapping lady, they fight – a bunch in the water, and the kidnapping lady is what, dragged under by her heavy flashlight or something
that
she's got on her.
I mean, she like chokes her and all that stuff.
And so Halle Berry drowns this woman right in front of her son.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of those things where if you're a kid and you fantasize seeing your parents killing a kidnapper, you'd probably you think you'd be like, that's awesome, but in real life it would be the scariest thing you've ever seen in your life.
Yeah.
But that kid, he does his homework on time from now on.
Oh yeah. You better believe he's not leaving his mom's sight. Yeah. And he's never drinking a juice box or eating pizza again. Because it is because he now associates those with being kidnapped. So she goes back for the girls, and a man walks in with a shotgun. He's like, I'm the neighbor. What are you doing? She says, they were kidnapping people. I've been their neighbor for 14 years. That's crazy.
Guys, this guy's wearing like an L.L. Bean sweater. There is no way he is the neighbor of these people.
He's like, that is very
like,
true.
Of course they're not. I just assume they're weird cannibals, not kidnappers.
I just assumed that they were siblings who have sex with each other. I wasn't going to judge them, and they weren't going to judge me for running a hedge fund that's slowly destroying the world economy. So you know what? Let's live and let live. And I thought for a moment, is this going to be the message part of the movie where Halle Berry is shot for being black in a place where people are suspicious of that? Like, or at the end of Night of the Living Dead, where the black hero is killed tragically. But no, that's not what it is. He says, oh, let me help you get those kids out of there. And she goes, let me help you get those girls out of there. And she goes, I didn't tell you there was more than one kid up there or that they were girls. This guy was in on it.
Yeah, of course.
And so while he reaches for the gun behind his back, Halle Berry slashes him across the body with her jagged shovel.
She blasts him in the head with it. And then later on, when she's being let out by the cops, they're like, you killed all those guys. She killed that dude with one hit.
They're like, do you want an application to the police force?
She says, you took the wrong kid, which should be the slogan of the movie. They took the wrong kid. Just her angry face. And it was like, I have to admit, as a parent at that moment, I was like, yeah, that's damn right. You did take the wrong kid.
Yeah.
But the implication is also, if you had taken another kid that wasn't mine, peace be with you. You know, God bless. Do what you want to do. I'm in my town and country. I can take care of myself.
Yeah,
you took my kid, so that means trouble. But you should have taken another kid.
Yeah, if she had just, you know, guys, if she had just worked the double like her boss had said, none of this would have happened. If she had just accepted her place as a cog in this grist mill of capitalism.
Yeah. In the food industrial complex that she's just a tiny piece of.
Yeah, that's,
then this never would have been a happen. Yeah.
Yeah, the moral
of the
story
is, this never would have been a happen.
Yeah. This never would have been a happen, eh? No, the moral of the story is, don't go to the fair, basically.
Or always work a double shift.
Yeah.
Just you'll get overtime pay for it, probably. But a helicopter appears overhead. The police have arrived. And we just hear these news reports that are talking about how this was a multiple state child abduction ring that's now been broken up now that Halle Berry's revealed it. And it ends on the line of a newscast. This is just audio. We ends on a newscaster saying, this mother is one incredible hero. as if the audience didn't get it up till that. But like, yeah, it's like, one of those.
Oh.
It's like, it is to this movie what the moment is in The Imitation Game, where it's like, we call them computers. Oh, that thinking machine he was building was a computer. I get it.
Now, did you guys stick around for the after credits scene where Nick Fury shows up and invites her to become part of the Fantastic Four?
Have you heard of the Angry Parents Initiative?
Okay.
Now, guys, let me be straight about this movie. Let me just be clear about it. This movie operated for me on exactly the level and at exactly the way it was intended to operate for me. Like, this is, I don't remember the last time I've seen a movie where I was as on edge while watching it as this one.
Yeah.
And like, as like, it had me in its grip until like the first, like I said, the first 10, 15 minutes, I was like, this is dumb. But then as soon as she gets in her car, from then until the end of the movie, I was like, what's going to happen? What, you got to catch that kid. What's going on?
Yeah. I mean, well, that sounded like a final judgment. So let's make it official. Is this a good, bad movie, a bad, bad movie, or a movie you kind of like? Elliot.
I would say I'd go even farther than a movie I kind of liked. This was a movie I would recommend.
Really?
To people who want to watch, like a trash chase thriller.
Yeah.
Like, it's not, if you want to watch a movie that's just like, it's just nonstop, like, white knuckle, a kid is in danger, and a woman and the angry mother is chasing swamp people in her town and country minivan, like,
yeah,
then this is a good version of that. Like, this is a good like exploitation dumb thriller.
Yeah. I would say this is a movie I kind of liked. I think I probably am a, like, slightly less high on it. But because I, for me, as soon as she got out of the car, like things sort of slowed down a little bit. All the stuff at the end was not as thrilling to me as like the car chase stuff.
That's true. The car chase stuff is the good stuff.
But yeah, I had fun watching this movie. I was kind of surprised. And it's like, I think it's less than 90 minutes. I'm not sure about that, but it's very short.
I think it's like, yeah, I think it's like 85 minutes long or 81 minutes. Like this is, they did not stretch out this movie. And also all the stuff I thought was going to come into play, like I was like, oh, maybe her husband kidnapped the kid because he wants custody.
Oh.
And he's trying to make it look like she's insane. Like I was like, what dumb twist are you going to put on this movie? No dumb twist. It is so straightforward. She's at the fair. Her kid gets taken. She chases after it. And that's it.
Yeah. I mean, it's a movie that begins at a fair. has a long car chase and then basically ends at the Baker house from Resident Evil 7. So, yeah, I'm into it. No, it was great. And it was short, you know, like 85 minutes. Heck yeah. Give me that. And, I feel like it was a telling sign that usually when I'm watching a movie for the show and I get up to go to the bathroom and my wife goes, do you want me to pause it? And I'm like, no,
this time is my time. I'm taking a break.
Yeah. But no, this time I smashed the pause button because I didn't want to miss a moment.
Yeah. So, if you like watching like trash thrillers, then this is a good one to go to, you know, I was worried because like 30 minutes into the movie, I was like, we are going to have trouble. What are we going to talk about on the podcast? Unless this movie goes way off the rails. Like, I'm enjoying it way too much.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, like
this is a movie that didn't try to be smarter than it is, which I really appreciate.
Yeah. Hey, guys, we should talk a little bit more about the Max Fun Drive.
Hey, Max Fun Drive.
Look,
do we have to say it like that?
Hey.
So, Dan, what is the Max Fun Drive? For anyone who is a new listener to this episode, never heard this show before, not familiar with Max Fun, what keeps the lights on and what keeps us afloat? Explain the Max Fun Drive.
Well,
Max Fun.
Oh, wow.
Explain the Max Pain Drive. Now, this is how we keep ourselves funded. I mean, basically, I mean, you know, we do a few ads, but those, we'll be honest, are a small fraction of the, you know, the money we get for doing the podcast. Most of it comes from listeners like you who have memberships to Maximum Fun, and it helps us be able to keep doing what we're doing. I don't want to panic anyone. I don't want to make them a little extra anxious, but I think that's fair to say that, like, this year it was a little harder to keep the show going than in previous years just because Elliot moved. You know,
the main reason
our lives have changed a little bit, you know, like, and
what are you trying to tell me, Dan? What's going on?
No, I'm just saying, like, I guess
Dan's saying it's the last episode. Good night, everybody.
Yeah. So donate.
It helps to, there's certain, like, as someone speaking for myself, as someone with a family,
yeah,
it is. I love doing this show. I love doing it with you guys, especially because you're my good buddies and I like entertaining people, but like it makes it much more doable in a world where I have a family to take care of and spend time with that we're paid for this.
Yeah, we are.
And it means, and especially not to pull the curtain back on my life too much, starting out a new life in LA as a freelance person, I don't have the kind of steady income that I once did, and getting the income from this show has been a huge help in making sure that I don't have to. I mean, really, what it makes sure is that I can have the career that I want to have, and don't find myself doing work that I would then have to, I guess, murder myself for doing. No, that's too intense. I guess what it really is, it's like a huge help in keeping me afloat, too.
Yeah.
I have to say.
We all have responsibilities. Elliot has a family. Stuart runs a business. I have crippling depression that I need to feed.
Yeah, yeah.
So.
Yeah, by buying new things.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you can't just survive on writing Thundercats fan fiction, Dan.
No, I can't. Believe me, I have tried. But listen, if you become a member, it's good for you, too, because you'll feel good every time you listen to the show.
You'll be like, I'm your boss. Yeah. I own these people.
That's right.
I paid your salaries.
Oh, that's fun.
Way every time I get pulled over by a cop, I say, I pay your salary, sir.
Yeah, I went through.
I don't really do that.
I went through a pretty lean time a little bit ago, and it's nice to be able to, when I got out of that lean time, it felt really good to be able to support things that I like. And, you know, especially when it's something like art or something I enjoy.
Oh, and I would also like to say it benefits folks, too, in that the more that we get funding.
Did I just call our fucking podcast art?
I wasn't going to say
yeah,
anything.
Yeah, but you meant it was like short for Arthur. Okay. Like his name is Arthur Flophouse.
One benefit for listeners, too, I mean, depending on where you live, is the money that you give us helps us do things like tour. Which maybe we wouldn't be able to do if we didn't have money in the coffers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we get to go out and do live shows, which is something we really enjoy.
And if they're a
but
new,
that's not everything.
If they're
let's,
a newer upgrading donor.
Oh yeah.
If this is your first time becoming a member of Max Fun, or if you're an existing member that increases your monthly donation. You're going to get some cool prizes, some cool gifts.
Yeah, there's pledge gifts.
So if you go to MaximumFun.org/donate, you'll see that you can donate at a number of different levels, as low as $5 a month or as high as $200 a month. And the best stuff, I think, is probably around, like, if you do the $10, $20, or $35 levels a month. That's when the most exciting things that you get are there.
Yeah, but let's go through some of these gifts. At the $5 per month level, there's exclusive bonus content, and that means that at this point, there's literally hundreds of hours of extra Max Fun shows that you don't get as a regular non-contributing person. Including several hours of Flophouse shows. We've done some things like we've talked about bad TV shows instead of bad movies. We've done extra letter segments. We've done what else have we done? We've done some other stuff, I think.
Yeah, and we got a special new set of bonus episodes that are going to be coming to you.
Oh yeah,
I think the first one's going to be coming up pretty soon. That's an extension of the Flophouse crossovers with the Adventure Zone. This was a complicated project that we put together, and I am looking forward to you guys getting a chance to hear it.
So that's just at $5 a month. You just get all that bonus content. But wait, there's more.
At the $10 per month level, you get a beautiful enamel pen designed by Megan Lynn Cott. And you may remember that there have been enamel pens in the past. This is a brand new design.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen the Flophouse one. It's a lovely picture of Nicolas Cage with good bad under it.
Don't know why you had to say lovely. I thought it was implied.
Redundant.
At the $20 per month level, you'll get the Max Fun Family Cookbook, which is a bunch of recipes from Max Fun contributors.
Do you guys want to know how I roast vegetables at home?
Yeah.
Because it's in there.
Is it? Good. I'm glad that you got it in, because I was like, did we get something in there?
Yes, we did. Okay. There's a way that I roast vegetables at home that my wife taught me, and then I kicked it up a notch by increasing the seasoning by like 1,000-fold. And it's in there. You'll enjoy it. I think you guys are going to like it.
At the $35 per month level, there's a 1-liter juice carafe, which is engraved with the Max Fun Rocket logo. And you don't need to put juice in there. You could put in other things. You know, if you're a drinker, you could put some alcoholic beverages in there. I'm not going to tell your parents.
Anything that's carafable, pee in it. I don't care. Use it wisely. Here's the thing. You're a swamp person. You live in a shack. You're not used to pouring things into cups. Here's a good start. Pour that soda out of the bottle into a carafe, and then pour that carafe into a glass, and then drink it that way.
So we don't want to, you know, talk your ear off about this. We'll be back at the end of the show to talk a little bit more about it. But for now, just go to MaximumFun.org/donate. And, I wanted to say one of the great things about this is you get to choose which shows you listen to, and the money goes directly to the people that you listen to. So, you know that the art you particularly, art, the stuff that you like gets supported directly. So that's,
I'm going to call it comedy and culture instead of art, because that's what they say in the Max Fun stinger at the end is comedy and culture. But if don't worry, if there's a show you hate on Max Fun and you're worried you're going to donate to us and it's going to go to that show, don't worry. When you donate to us, it goes to us. We're not sharing that money with the show you hate. We're keeping it for ourselves and we're going to eat it up and it's going to go in our bellies so the other show can't ever get it. So if you go when you go to pledge, you choose which show you want to donate to, and you should choose Flophouse if that's the one you want to donate to, and I hope it is, because then the money goes to us. But don't worry that you're like, oh, I don't want my money to go to a show that I don't want it to. Or
that's a pretty good impression of our listeners, by the way.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're like, most of our listeners don't like other Max Fun shows. No, I'm just kidding. They like a lot of them. There are a lot of good shows.
Yeah. I'm a member. I donate to a lot of shows. But
that's true. And I want to say this.
Yeah.
I would love it if you stopped the podcast right now, pause it, go to MaximumFun.org/donate right now and do it now while you're thinking about it,
yeah,
because you're probably going to forget to do it. Don't put it on your to-do list. It's got to be during the pledge drive. Go do it and then come back. Or listen to this while you're doing it. I don't know. You don't have to stop.
Yeah.
Or if you're at the gym right now, mm-hmm, then like,
yeah, yeah,
stop. Stop exercising and go home and do this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. While you're at the gym anyway, you know, that's a tiring thing to do.
And what, going to the gym?
Yeah.
Yeah?
It's no fun.
Put down the weights?
Yeah, stop it.
Okay.
Also, you're making me look bad. So
stop making Dan look bad. You know what would help make Dan feel a little bit better about you looking better than him?
Yeah.
Give him some money. Go to MaximumFun.org/donate. Also, and I hate to say it, the house cat owes a lot of money to some very bad people. And
you said you weren't
going to
bring that up, dude.
I just
he trusted you.
Now's the time, if ever.
So now we should.
So what do we do next on the podcast, Dan? Do we talk more about the pledge drive?
Now in the podcast, we move on to letters.
Oh, letter bag.
Yeah, our movie mailbag. We haven't called it that in a while. Why not bring that back? So these are listeners like you. They've written in. You can write in if you go to the show page at Flophouse Podcast.
Are you just vamping while you find the letters?
Dan. Hey, a little bit. Dan. It seems like you're vamping till a song kicks in. Well, guess what? Good news for you. I've got a song and it's coming through to our pledge donors all over the world. Pledge donors, top to bottom. Pledge donors, they're gonna hurl. When they find out all the great stuff they're gonna get when they pledge. Hey, Dan. Sometimes you're waiting for a letters song to kick in, but the guy who's waiting for the moment to sing the song is curious just how long you'll go before the song kicks in. And so I let you hang a little longer. So I let you dangle over the pit of, what kind of pit would it be? I was going to say pit of Damocles, but that's a sword of Damocles that hangs over somebody else. So forget that part. Let's get to the heart of the song for the show for letters. Because, hey, guys, reading letters, that ain't cheap. We pay 100 people to read all the letters. Then they get extra money when they find a good letter and they pass it along to us. That's a lot of overhead. Financially, it would leave us dead without the pledges that you bring in for the letter readers from letter writers that give it to us and then they read it to Dan because Dan can't read. That's his secret. He's ashamed of it. He asked me not to tell. But I figured, what the hell? For the pledge donors, they can learn the truth. Dan's illiterate, both when it comes to reading and also somewhat emotionally. And so, hey, we want to get Dan these classes so he can finally use those glasses and read a letter to himself for once. So why don't you help us make Dan's dream a reality with letters?
All right, this is the definition
like when,
of insult.
When
to
Elliot realizes he knows the rhyme, like it, he starts to pick up an intensity. It's like I just said, tell. Now I'm going to say, what the hell?
So this first letter is from Jake, last name withheld,
and the fat man.
That's right, both of them. He writes, hey, Floppers, I recently finished reading George Saunders' novel Lincoln and the Bardo, the acclaimed, strange, affecting novel about President Lincoln coping with the death of his young son and the escalating Civil War. Naturally, because I spend way too much time listening to you three, I wondered immediately if noted Lincoln head Elliot Kalin had read the book. This also made me wonder what the Floppers like to read. I know there have been some comics recommendations in the past, but since you three have steered me well with movies over the years, I wanted to ask, Are there any books you three always find yourself recommending? Anything recent? Thanks for the recs. Keep on flopping.
I have read Lincoln and the Bardo, and I really liked it a lot.
Okay. Well, that answers that question.
There was, I think the format he decided to write it in is a little difficult in a way that it's written as if it's all quotes taken from different sources, so you don't always know who's talking until you get to the bottom of the quote and you read their name. But I thought of all the things I've read that have tried to get inside of Lincoln's head and his way of thinking, I thought George Saunders did it best. The times when you're inside Lincoln's thought process, I was like, this is probably how his thinking worked. So I thought he did a really fantastic job with it.
Yeah. I think, to answer the larger question, I believe I've mentioned some of my favorite books before, so I won't belabor that. I mean, like, I talked about Robertson Davies' The Deptford Trilogy. I think I've talked about how much I like Harpo Marx's autobiography, Harpo Speaks. I love the Alice books by Lewis Carroll. Those are some of my, like, personal favorites. But in terms of, like, stuff I've been reading lately, I read Miranda July's novel, The First Bad Man, which I thought was pretty terrific. You know, she's known as an artist and a filmmaker. She made Me, You, and Everyone We Know and The Future. I may have fucked up the first title. I can't remember whether it's Everyone or Everybody. But
well, we'll let you. The fans will let you know, and it will be scathing.
Oh, by the way, speaking of which, I fucked up so in The Snowman, Oleg's father is actually some sort of Russian mobster. He's not Harry Holt, so just wanted to put that out there. But anyway, Miranda July's novel.
We figured it out.
It was not clear from the movie, and I couldn't remember from the book.
We were just like a couple of Harry Holes there figuring that one out.
Yeah.
But, too late for me to win at pub trivia, but okay, fine.
It's a very interesting book. It's a character study of a very odd sort of character who's very lovable. The second half of the book didn't resonate with me as much as the first, just because of who I am. I'm a childless man, and the second half of the book is very much about motherhood. So it wasn't like
you're talking
me.
About Miranda July's book.
Miranda July's
for
book.
A second, I thought you were talking about Harry Hole.
Yeah, the second part of the book was how Harry Hole became a mother.
it was just like Junior with Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah, but I would recommend that book to other readers. Are there books that the rest of you are? The rest of you being the two others.
I mean, I don't know. I like a lot of like weird fiction. Your Jeff Vandermeers, your China Mievilles, and lately, and I also have a tendency to like read a lot of like comfort stuff for me. So like my comfort zone is usually like Bernard Cornwell historical war novels and like historical fiction, or you know,
those
your Patrick
Sharps
O'Brien
book?
Yeah, the Sharps Rifles, yeah. And his Arthurian trilogy, his Warlord Chronicles. It's awesome. I think, and they made the TV show Last Kingdom based on a series. It's really great. And like Dan Abnett's sci-fi stuff. I don't know, you know, nerdy crap.
I think I've mentioned my favorite books before on the podcast. The Power Broker by Robert Caro is my favorite nonfiction book. Runner up, The Journalist and the Murderer by Janet Malcolm. And my favorite fiction books are Alice in Wonderland, as Dan mentioned, and also The Man Who Was Thursday by G.K. Chesterton. But some books I just read recently that I liked a lot, I really liked the book Kindred by Octavia Butler, which is kind of a time travel novel about someone from modern days going back to slave times whenever her ancestor is in trouble. And it went in directions I didn't expect it to go, and I thought it was really good. And if you like George Saunders, there's a short story book that came out a couple years ago called The Hall of Small Mammals that is very George Saunders-like, but I actually liked it a little bit more than I usually like his work. I can't remember the name of the author, which I feel bad about, but it's called The Hall of Small Mammals.
Okay. I hope that gives some listeners a little direction that they might want to, you know, follow up on. But the next letter...
And right now I'm also reading an academic text called The Comic Hero about the idea of that there is a hero of comedy in the same way that there's a hero of tragedy, and looking at different stuff. And I'm enjoying that a lot, but it's like a little bit more into text analysis than I'm used to. So I don't know if I'd recommend it to someone who wants to read an academic book, but I don't know if you do.
Yeah, the only academic stuff I read is old issues of Nintendo Power magazine.
You're like, what's Nestor up to this time? Now, here's my problem with it. So when I was a kid, I never had a subscription to Nintendo Power. And I always wanted
my phone down.
So I would just borrow other kids' issues. And there was that ongoing Link comic strip from Zelda that I never saw the beginning and I never saw the end, and the chapters didn't always match up because I wasn't reading like every issue one after another. So did that story ever – was that a coherent story? Do you guys know that Legend of Zelda comic strip?
Is that like the Milo Manara comics that would run in Penthouse where you're like, I don't follow this closely enough to know where this begins or ends?
I mean, kind of in a way, I guess. I'm not familiar with those ones, but it was like I would pick up an issue of Nintendo Power from a friend and I'd be like, I just want some cheat hints. Like, just show me where the bad guys are waiting for me on this level. And then here's four pages of comic strip where Link is dealing with something that I don't know what it is. And I just wondered if that was always confusing or if people who were following the story were like, ah, yes, I know. Uh-oh, this happened? So I guess write in if you remember those comic strips.
Okay.
I guess so.
Call to action.
This next letter is from Sebastian, last name withheld, who writes...
The crab.
Oh. I'm surprised he can type. This says, it seems like anyone who's anyone these days has an enemy. Democrats have Republicans, cats have dogs, and even our own Stuart Wellington counts the deadly and mysterious Al Madrigal, a.k.a. Al Magical, amongst his gallery of rogues. Elliot, meanwhile, has both John Hodgman, a.k.a. Judge Dredd, a.k.a. Boss Hodgman, as a nemesis, and even squares off against his brother David Kalin, the anti-hero Knuckles the... Oh, fuck, I don't know how to say that word. To his Sonic the Hedgehog. But what about Dan? Although he is bedeviled and antagonized by his friends, he seems to lack any true villain to call his own. Floppers, doesn't Dan need an enemy too? Someone to stand against, to thwart and triumph over? How else is he going to get the babes if he can't throw off his Clark Kent glasses and become the Superman that exists in his heart? Keep on flopping in the free world, Sebastian. This raises a good point.
What's that?
I don't know.
Who's your villain?
Who's my villain?
It's like a happy version of you who's like laid back and chill.
I think you're the villain, Dan. I think you're the bad guy version of some Dan who's got it all together and has it figured out.
Oh,
you're the goofus to his gallant in a way.
So you're saying this is like the twist end of some like Twilight Zone episode where I realized that I was the bad one.
Yes, exactly. You think there's a guy who's trying to destroy your life and you start to worry that your nightmares have come to life. But then it turns out you were the nightmare who came to life from this guy's life. And he's just trying to get rid of you because you've been hurting him.
It's like you're also the bad guy from the Dark Half. But okay. you killed the other guy. Now you're still alive.
I don't even remember
that. Because everyone's the hero of their own story. The bad guy from the Dark Half is the hero when he tells the tale.
Yeah.
Now, Dan, this is going to sound insulting, but I'm just going to say this. So I think Stuart and I both have very well-defined dynamic personalities.
Okay. You're right. It does sound insulting.
And that makes it easier to define what our opposite numbers would
be. Yeah, wait for it. And he's going to compliment you.
It's a little bit like saying, what's the enemy of oatmeal? Well, I don't know. Oatmeal's just oatmeal.
I like to think of myself as having sort of a happy medium in my life where I sort of walk the middle path, as it were.
Oh, I see. Interesting. Okay. You're neither a samurai walking the path of redemption, nor are you the jester walking the path of, I assume, pointing out the truth of humanity's hypocrisy by enacting his foolishness. Instead, you're just like a farmer, just doing whatever.
Okay. I mean, he just paraphrased you
100% accurately, right?
All right. Yeah, that was what I was saying.
No, but Dan, tell me more about this middle path.
No. Let's move on to the next letter.
So, okay, listeners, write in. If you've got an enemy for Dan, write in and make it happen.
I kind of want to have been a fly in the wall for Dan's thought process. For when he's like, I'm going to read this letter. Do you think the guys are just going to compliment me the whole time?
Why, Dan, everyone loves him. That's why he doesn't have an enemy.
I didn't really get much past, like, this is an amusing conceit. when I chose the letter. I didn't really like go to that next step where I realized what was going to occur.
Yeah. Dan, have you ever heard the theory that Sherlock Holmes kind of invented Moriarty to have somebody who could finally match wits with?
Uh-huh. Well, I mean, there's...
Because I think...
I mean, like, that's kind of the Batman and Joker, too, right? The idea that, like, the Joker wouldn't exist if Batman wasn't there to oppose him.
Yeah. So maybe it's time for you to bring your own enemy into creation.
Okay.
Make it happen.
All right. Yeah, because I need another thing in my life that is going to cause me trouble.
Well, maybe, like,
now I worry that some fan is going to be like, oh, sorry, what did you say, Stuart?
I was going to say, like, maybe having opposition would, like, push you to new heights of damnness.
Okay.
Well, now I'm worried that a listener is going to be like, oh, that's what's missing from Dan's life is a villain. And so a villain I shall be. And he'll just start bedeviling you.
Okay. Yeah, that all of our energy directed toward getting people to join the Max Fun Drive will instead.
Hey, you know what, Dan? You know what would really be great for Dan's villain to do? Exactly. Go to MaximumFun.org/donate. And make a pledge. It could be $10, $20, $35 a month. You get great gifts, and you support Dan, which will make you have more to villainize later on.
All right. Well, we're going to get back into that in a second, but let's finish off this letter segment with someone who...
With a bullet to the back of the head.
Someone who withheld his name entirely, or her name, I shouldn't assume.
Or its name, or their name.
Yeah. Well, yeah, definitely. Their name.
Yeah.
So they write, when Wonder Woman was released, I took my mother to see it as a late Mother's Day present. Seeing someone who had been reading comics since the 50s finally see their favorite character brought to life on the big screen made the experience especially special. Have you ever had a particularly touching experience in sharing a movie with someone? A bonus question for Stuart. Which series is better, Halloween or Friday the 13th, and which series has the best single movie? Thanks for everything.
I think this is going to sound... I may have talked about this before. This is going to sound lame because it's dad stuff, mm-hmm. but I'm having that experience right now with... I've started watching the Marx Brothers movies with my son in order, so we haven't gotten super far. We're in Monkey Business right now, which I think is just their third movie, but seeing the way he reacts to it without me saying, like, here's the funny part, just how naturally he finds the Chico and Harpo stuff especially funny is very meaningful to me and very moving. And like, now the game he wants to play all the time is, okay, I'm Harpo, you're Chico, or I'm Harpo, you're Lucy, and we're doing the mirror bit, because I showed him the Harpo Lucy mirror routine from, it was either the Lucy Show or I Love Lucy, I forget which. And just being able to share that with him and seeing, like, oh, okay, this is something that's going to be special for him in the future, the way it was special to me is something. That's that kind of meaningful experience.
Yeah,
I like it a lot.
I'm sort of racking my brain. I don't know that I've shared a movie in the way of like being like, you got to see this movie that I love, and then had a meaningful experience about it. I will say that. I mean, this is obviously a little bittersweet, seeing as my wife and I are not together anymore. But I still treasure it, and you know, like I treasure the relationship we had. We early on watched Rushmore together, and that was sort of our movie in the way that people have songs. Like it was an early kind of quote unquote date. I mean, we met in college, so you don't really date in college. But it was kind of It was kind of when we first got together, and so Rushmore holds a special place in my heart, although, again, it's kind of a bittersweet place now. I have a harder time watching it than I did before, but it's still meaningful to me.
It's not that hard. Just put it in your DVD player and press play, buddy.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. It works. Maybe you need a new DVD player.
I'll look into that.
Something I didn't even think about till you started talking about yours, Dan, is that my experience with my son is there, it reminds me of the first time I ever saw any Preston Sturges movies, mm-hmm. which is when my grandmother took me to Film Forum for the first time when I was probably 12 or 13. And I had never been there, and that eventually became where I spent like most of my time when I was in college. But I had never seen Preston Sturges movies before, and we saw Unfaithfully Yours and Miracle in Morgan's Creek, and it really blew me away, especially Miracle in Morgan's Creek. And it's so – It's like I'm doing with my son what my grandma did with me.
Yeah,
so it's like, you know, a family thing.
That didn't occur to me. Like, it doesn't have to be me sharing something. It can be something shared to me. And I think that I also had that experience, weirdly enough, with the Marx Brothers, where my parents showed me Animal Crackers early on in my life, and I was just blown away. And I'm like, this is the greatest. And it, you know, it was something that they, you know, had already experienced. I mean, like, they would have been extremely young. I mean, like, they weren't there for the first time around. I remember my mother told me that her father took her to see Love Happy, which was the last Marx Brothers movie and not a good one at all. So they weren't there for the good ones, but you know, it would have been something that they knew from growing up.
Yeah, I mean, I can't think of a single time when I shared something with someone and they particularly enjoyed it. I'm like, wow, what does that say about my taste?
You're like, hey, wife, you want to watch Anthrofagus? And she's like, no, I don't want to watch that.
And so, but there was a time, I mean, a few years ago, my wife got me to watch Dirty Dancing, a movie I'd never seen, and I fucking loved it. And it's and then I ended up buying tickets for us to go to the there's like a special screening at the Draft House. Like, I love that movie. It's great. So that was really cool because that was a movie she grew up with and had a connection to. And I get it. It's awesome. And as for your other question, Friday the 13th beats Halloween. Friday the 13th has the best movies. Nadoy. Friday the 13th, part 6 and 7 are great. Oh, part 4 is amazing. Halloween has one good one called Halloween Part 3, Season of the Witch, dude. All the other ones are fucking trash.
You're so crazy. But that's fine.
Crazy,
so
for funny. Jason, baby.
There was a time when I think Halloween 3 was seen as the, like, outsider.
Yeah.
Like, that was the one that people set aside and were like, that's not really a Halloween movie. And I feel like opinion of it has turned around so much.
Yeah, because it's super dope.
Yeah.
And it's got one of the single most horrifying scenes I've ever seen in a movie.
Okay.
Which one is that?
When the little kid with the mask on his head like rots and maggots and shit pour out. It's so gross. Like, a little kid
dies. Pretty gross. That's pretty gross.
Like, it's a movie that kills a little kid. That's insane.
Yeah. You didn't ask me, but I'm a Halloween partisan. Anyway.
Okay. Well, Dan's wrong. So what's next?
What's next is we should talk a little bit more about the Max Fun Drive. Please don't fast forward because this is important.
their thumb is now hovering over the 15-second skip button.
Yeah, just like, make it worth my while. Prove it to me. So let's say right off the bat again, don't forget that URL, maximumfun.org/donate. You should be going there now if you didn't already go there. And just how important it is to us that you show your support, because it means a lot to us both in terms of money, which we need to live because we live in a capitalist society that's based around artificial scarcity, which is, let's set aside for the moment, but also because there's something that is like, there is something that feels really good about getting our pledge amounts in. And it's like, oh, like, people really care enough about what we're doing to literally put their money where their
ears
pod
are?
Is.
Okay.
Where their ears are. But like, it's a reminder, not just like, oh, this is great, like, we can feed ourselves, but also, oh, people really like what we're doing enough to support it for real. And it gives us that much more kind of strength and enthusiasm and energy to do it, because we know we're not hurling our words out into the void, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it means a lot to us on an emotional level, too.
And you'll feel good because you'll know that you're supporting something that you enjoy rather than, I don't know, just freeloading off of it.
And it also, I mean, one of the things that I like is that a little bit of the donation money goes to the Max Fun Network.
Sure.
And Max Fun has been making a lot of effort to bring new content and bring new shows, and especially
and a wide variety of shows.
Yeah. And especially put effort into bringing shows that aren't just a couple of three lunkheads like us talking about movies.
Sometimes it's two lunkheads talking about something else.
Yeah.
Yeah. We should talk.
And look. If you're new, if you've never pledged before, now's a good time. If you're already pledged, why not upgrade? There's a goal network-wide of 25,000 new or upgrading members. That's a huge amount. That sounds crazy. But you know what? They had a crazy goal last time, and they exceeded it. And as a result, Stuart, aren't you going to the Grand Canyon or something?
Yeah, I mean, very, very possibly this will be the last episode of the Flophouse featuring Stuart, because there's a chance I will fall into the Grand Canyon and die. to be torn apart by rabid donkeys.
Yeah.
Yep, that's what lives there. That's the horror movie Stuart's pitching. Mm-hmm. It's called Damned Canyon.
Oh, cool.
I'm gonna mention the bonus gifts one more time. I won't get into the great detail because we already said it, but for $10 or for $5 per month, you get all that exclusive bonus content, extra episodes. For $10 a month, you get the exclusive enamel pen designed by Megan Lynn Cott. That's a great Nicolas Cage design. For $20 per month, you can get that Max Fun Family Cookbook and learn Elliot's vegetable roasting secrets. For
I also reveal the secret in it of what I do when my family's out of town and I'm by myself for the night.
Masturbate? That's in the book?
That's not in the book. It's implied, I guess. That I'll just roast a whole pan of broccoli and that'll be my dinner, and then I'll watch like an Eastern European movie.
For $35 per month, you get that juice carafe that's engraved with the Max Fun logo, and there's a bunch of other higher levels with even more gifts, but we know that a lot of you don't have you aren't like rich tycoons, so you can look into those gifts at the donate page and see what you can get if you pay a little bit more per
month. If you're one of those rich tycoon listeners,
yeah, those oil
then tycoons. Please. So what you're going to do, you're going to go to the MaximumFun.org/donate. You're going to see your membership levels grid and choose how much you want to contribute per month. And then you give them your credit card information and select which show you want the money to go to. And, you know, then it just automatically every month your pledge will go through. And until you decide that you have had enough time in this form and it's time for you to childhood's end it up into space to join the spirits among the lunar landscape on the next level of evolution. But that's not going to happen for a while, probably.
I want to make it clear, Elliot said which show you want the money to go to. You can pick multiple shows, so you don't have to have like a Sophie's Choice between us and, I don't know, The Adventure Zone or something like that.
Or like Switchblade Sisters.
Yeah. Something equally or like maybe fights. Better good. I said better good.
Yeah, better good.
Oh, and
the most redundant phrase in the English language, better good.
It's so, and your membership contribution processes automatically. You can do it one time. You don't have to worry about it ever again. And you won't even feel it. You won't even feel it. It's like,
no, and you'll except the only thing you'll feel is you'll feel the joy of knowing. Every time you listen to the episode, you'll be like, I'm part of the people supporting it. Like, I think I may have told the story on the podcast before. When I found out that the Chinese movie Devils on the Doorstep made $20,000 in its theatrical run in the United States, which meant that probably less than 2,000 people went to see it, probably. And I was like, I remember seeing that movie in the theater. I'm part of that like select group of Americans that went to see that movie in the theater, and it makes me feel like I'm special. So you'll be able to feel special every episode by being like, I'm one of the people who's really making this possible.
Yeah.
This is, I own a little piece of this. Now, you don't really own a piece of it legally. Like, that's, don't sue us for that ownership stake. But you own a little piece of its heart, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Don't sue us for the heart either.
Yeah.
No, we need that to keep beating our movie blood into our video veins.
Yeah.
The new flesh.
So why not go to MaximumFun.org/donate right now while you're thinking about it and put in that monthly membership donation. So now,
what do we do?
Let's recommend a few movies. I mean, we liked Kidnap. So
we recommended books. We recommended Kidnap.
Yeah.
But, we recommended being a member of Max Fun.
Yeah, but let's recommend just a little bit more.
Okay.
Movies that we saw. Maybe recently, maybe not so recently. I don't know. I don't know how you live your life that you like. Sure, I'll go first since no one else is talking.
Yeah, sorry for being polite, Dan. You're right. I'll just rush and interrupt you again because I know you love that so much.
I saw a movie I enjoyed very much recently called Thoroughbreds.
Uh-huh.
And this is
the... Oh, that's the one about Henry David Thoreau's bakery.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds like a thrilling idea.
I mean,
for
the
a
math
movie.
Works. Yeah, that works. Okay.
No, it's a movie about two young, wealthy.
Oh, now I know why Dan liked it.
Ladies. Two prep school girls. One played by Anna Taylor-Joy.
From The Witch.
The Witch. The other one played by, I can't remember her name. I think it's Olivia Cook. Yes, it is Olivia Cook, who is going to be, I don't know her from other work.
From Adam.
She's going to be in the upcoming Ready Player One. What?
You don't know her from Adam.
Yeah.
I'm glad that we're getting all the interruptions in now.
But both actors are fantastic in this movie. They're both terrific. The film, I'll just give like a little bit of the setup. I don't want to spoil things. It is about these two girls who, one of whom, Olivia Cook's character, recently slaughtered her horse. Put her own horse down, and so she's looked upon as kind of a crazy person, and she reveals that she does not feel emotions the way other people feel emotions. And Anna Taylor-Joy's character is sort of emotionally pent up, even though she does kind of have raging emotions beneath things, and they form this kind of unhealthy bond where they reinforce the negative aspects of each other's character, mm-hmm. which leads to violence eventually. And Anton Yelchin is also in this movie. Oh, it might be his last film. I'm not sure if there's something else that's going to be released afterwards.
Well, he's not making any more, Dan, sadly to say.
I know. I just don't know whether it's the last movie released. I think I read that. He's terrific in it. It has been compared to Heathers. It's not quite as like expansive or satirical as Heathers. It started out as a stage play. That was originally how the guy thought he would write it, and he realized he was making a movie instead. But it still has some of that flavor of a play.
That's how Kidnap originally was made, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Originally, I think it was a stage play, and then he was like, how am I going to do this car chase on the stage? Real, I'm making a movie.
It'll be a real coup de theatre that they can do that. I just liked it a lot, and it's kind of an ice cold character study slash sort of a thriller, but not really. It's very good. Thoroughbreds. In theaters now.
Or at least when we recorded the episode.
Yeah.
So, guys, I just came back from a rather stressful trip to Florida to visit with my folks. And the conversations weren't super great and whatever. But After that bit of fucking fun, I got on the plane and ordered a double scotch and watched Good Time, which was
great choice if you're feeling stressed.
Yeah. Well, I'd already downloaded it onto my iPad, so I'm like, fuck it. Let's just lean into it. Yeah. And Good Time is a crime thriller that came out last year starring Twilight hunk Robert Pattinson. And it is a story about a ex-con, at least I think he's an ex-con, out on parole, who drags his mentally challenged brother into a bank heist with him. And, of course, everything almost immediately goes wrong. And it's and the whole movie takes place over one night, and the camera is always tight on people. And it's like a white knuckle 2-hour panic attack. And it's great. Robert Pattinson has a great Queens accent. It has a twist in it that I was totally blown away by. And there is a joke.
I don't even remember that.
There's a joke later in the movie where he's trying to convince this woman that he is dragged into his like conspiracy or whatever. One of his conspirators, he's like dragged her into this thing, and he's having this conversation with her, and there's a joke in it that is possibly the funniest thing I saw in a movie last year. Okay. It's really great and very intense. So watch it.
I want to see that. I'm going to recommend a movie. So lately I've been trying to go back and watch the movies that came out when I was a kid, but I never actually saw because they were grown-up movies and, you know, I wasn't old enough at the time. And I recently watched, speaking of, Dan's got a movie about two women, and this was a movie about a woman in a car and there's police involved. movie I watched recently that I'd never seen, I ended up really liking a lot, was Thelma and Louise with Gina Davis and Susan Sarandon and a ton of other big name people. And it's like, I had never seen it, and all I knew about it was basically how it ended for the most part. And it really worked for me on a lot of levels, and they did such a good job of like getting me into the headspace of these two characters and like showing how they were already living lives that were where most of their options were cut off, and then watching them have one option after another cut off from them, and how both tragic and how liberating that was for them. And I thought it was really, really good. And I can't, like, now I wish I could go back to 1991 and watch it then, because it must have really like messed with people's heads and blew their minds. And
when it came out, there was an attitude among a lot of folks that were like, things are going to change. And that makes it a little more tragic, because you know things don't change for a while.
Things didn't change. But you can see something that I've been thinking about a lot with in terms of fiction films is they make an impact, and they don't really – the impact is narrow but deep in a way.
Yeah.
In that it's like that movie, I'm sure, planted a seed or like a landmine in a lot of people's heads that it took a long time to germinate and go off. But it helped prepare the landscape in a way.
I get it. It's like maybe. when a death metal band releases a single album in the 90s, but now all the bands are totally copying their style in the 2017.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, in a way that it's also in a way that like a band will be kind of a cult band in the 80s, and then their listenership will grow over time as that album gets passed around.
Uh-huh.
And then by the time, like, I'm thinking of a band like Overkill in the 80s and 90s was like not a band that would get its albums on the charts, but the last couple albums they've released, their listenership has been growing for 30 years. So like now when they release an album, it's not high on the charts, but it appears on the charts.
Yeah.
But, and Overkill as a band is kind of exactly the opposite of Thelma and Louise as a movie in terms of what it stands for. But I just thought it was one of these movies.
Are you saying that
only kind
Thelma and Louise isn't about how awesome and tough New Jersey is?
Yeah, I'm saying exactly that. But it's a movie that, like, I knew it more from its reputation and being a controversial movie than from the movie itself. And the movie is really good, and it makes me be like, oh, Ridley Scott, you should be doing more movies like this nowadays and less movies like, I don't know, as much as I like Prometheus, like, we've got a lot of Prometheus stuff out there. So, like, maybe make more movies about people and less about monsters. I don't believe that. I like monster movies too.
No, but I mean, obviously the best stuff he did, the best thing he did probably was Alien, and like that's a big science fiction monster thing. But in like recent years, and recent, I guess it goes back to Thelma and Louise, which is not recent at all. But like, I don't know. I have enjoyed it more when he does a little more small scale stuff. It's not a movie that like has like a lot of love behind it, but
Gladiator.
I enjoyed Matchstick Men, which was a small, like little, like con movie. And it was more of a character study, like fun little, like, you know, just about people.
That's the one with Nicolas Cage in it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And Sam Rockwell, right?
I think so.
Yeah. That's why you like it, because it's got those guys.
Yeah. They're great.
Anyway, speaking of the movie I was recommending, everyone's really great in it. Susan Sarandon and Gina Davis just do a fantastic job in it. And in a weird way that like their relationship reminded me so much of the relationship my mom has with these two specific friends. My mom has never gone on a robbery and like shooting spree.
That you know the way that of. These kids,
that I know of. But just like the way that they interact as two women who are friends but are different types of women felt very real to me in the way they were performing and the way it was written. And I could see like, oh, I can see my mom's relationship with her best friends in this. And like, it made me think about that relationship in a way that I hadn't before. So it was just like a really good movie that affected me more than I expected it to, because I remember it being a movie that made a big splash in 1991. And then people I don't hear much about it since then. And I wish people talked about it more.
Yeah. Well, Stuart, we should let Elliot change out of his robe and start his day.
But thanks for pulling back the curtain. Look, we record this at a 3-hour time difference.
Yeah.
It's 3 hours earlier where I am.
Yeah.
on a Sunday, so maybe I don't have time to like shower and get dressed and put a suit on.
I've definitely like it's much later here, and I've definitely greeted Stuart in my home wearing my pajama pants before. Mm-hmm. So
I took that as an invitation to put on my pajamas.
You should,
which is just my underpants.
Yeah, we've seen that before. You've definitely podcasted
too many times.
In your underwear. That's just a little.
And once in that tiny bathing suit.
Yeah.
Just once in a tiny bathing suit? Oh, doing the podcast.
Yeah.
Doing the podcast. The one time that you left the table for a little bit and then came back wearing a tiny bathing suit.
Oh, man. I'm classic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Classics, too. So, guys, it's been great visiting with you, me in my bathrobe, you guys in your clothes or pajamas, as happens to be.
Yeah.
And do we have any last parting words for the audience before we leave them to go to MaximumFun.org/donate?
I think you took the words right out of my mouth, Elliot.
Oh.
Yeah, give me my words back.
Never. You've got my words, and I've got a special set of skills, word skills.
Yeah, Dan's going to need to eat a baby bird those words back into his mouth.
Yeah.
Oh. Guys, how long do you think until someone tries to pitch a thriller movie based on words with friends?
I think a very long time, Elliot. Unless you've got a really killer idea that you want to pitch us, but I don't.
No, that was it. That was the full idea. Okay. Like, here's the thing people do. Let's do like a thriller based on it.
Okay. So, Ian, MaximumFun.org/donate to support all the podcasts you love. And we should sign off now for the Flophouse. I've been Dan McCoy.
Hey, guys. I'm still Stuart Wellington.
In my bathrobe, I'm Elliot Kalin.
See ya.
Bye.
Let's keep with Skype this time around, and like maybe we can try FaceTime as an experiment next time.
Okay. Try it as a spearmint. You got it.
As a spearmint. Well, I'm Jeffy from Family Circus.
Right. That actually explains a lot.
Yeah, it explains why I have dotted lines behind me wherever I go.
Mm-hmm. That's little Billy.
Oh, okay.
Piece of shit.
Get your family circus right, asshole.
All right, well, I think we have our outtakes like for the end of the show.
It's like those two ghosts, It Wasn't Me and I Have No Idea. Dan, you know they're not me and I don't know.
All right.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.